Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello everyone, and welcome to this Thursday at 5 o'clock with Only Murders in My Mind. And in the studio, I've got my normal friends, Liz Hedgecock.
Hello.
Mike Jackson.
I'm not sure about the normal.
I was going to say exactly the same thing, but you know. I like the way you stress normal friends. Yeah. Who are your other friends, Carol?
Are
you recording a podcast with other people that we don't know about?
That could be, yeah. Mm-hmm. At night when I'm asleep, I think.
A secret podcast.
Oh, before we start today,
we've already got off on one.
I know. It's to do with the podcast. We've just realised that we have actually got people listening to our podcast in many other countries, and it's like really made me smile because I don't know why, but I always think of like YouTube, Spotify, it being this country, and it's international, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
If you are listening from another country, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us anything you like, but you know, tell us where you're from and how you found us and what you think of us. Would be great.
Be nice.
Yes, yeah, be kind, be gentle. And the other thing I want to mention is I went to a murder mystery event last week, and it was really entertaining. My team won, I'm just saying. But I came home with a Socko suit, some police tape, an evidence bag. We learned how to use tasers.
That's not at all concerning. So if we go quiet at any point during this episode, you'll know what happened.
Yeah, you have to put your weight on your left foot and go taser, taser, taser. Only shout it. I'm not going to shout it down the microphone.
And we don't want anybody asking Carol what she's doing with the handcuffs.
I've actually seen the Socko suit because Carol and I did a talk together at the library at a local festival last weekend. And yes, the Socko suit was there as atmosphere, ambiance, if you like.
It was stuck up over the book, so that was fun.
It's quite startling if you're not expecting it and you walk into the light.
So what are we talking about today, folks?
I thought it would be a good idea for us to explore one of our great friends, Hercule Poirot.
Oh, I like a bit of Hercule. Oh, oh yes. He's a lovely bloke. Well, I don't have to live with him, do I? So it's easy for me to say.
Can you imagine?
No.
It's funny, you're saying what a lovely chap he is, and he certainly is a favourite with many people. But I was doing a bit of research on this, and apparently Agatha Christie absolutely detested him. She called him a detestable, bombastic, egocentric little creep.
Wow.
And she only kept writing books about his adventures at the insistence of her publishers because they sold so well.
It's otherwise, a bit like the Sherlock Holmes thing,
yes,
isn't
I think
it?
She would have killed him off much earlier had it not been for the fact that he was a money-making machine.
Indeed.
Yes, I read something somewhere that said that he was self-centred and all the things you said. And that was one of the actors that had played him.
Yeah.
You know, so he'd really got into the role. But Poirot first appeared in the 1930s. Oh, no, it was 1920s. And carried on appearing till 1975 in various written forms, novels, plays, short stories, and of course the one thing I think we all love is the television series, because there have been many, and we've had films as well.
Yes. Apparently the first time he was on television was in 1937. It was on the BBC not long after they first aired.
Wow.
Which, it's a long career when you think about it.
I mean, I suppose also, that's pretty quick in terms of, I mean, if the BBC was only just, you know, getting going and Poirot had only been around since some point in the 20s, that's pretty, that feels like quite a quick transition from page to screen, if you see what I mean.
I just have this, I mean, again, like with Sherlock, the writer absolutely hating the character that they're writing about. And because it doesn't come over like that, does it, when you read her book? Well, does it when you read the books?
No, I don't think it does. I don't think you can see this sort of sudden change that she doesn't like the character. I think what it does, it highlights what a good writer that she was, because despite her own feelings, she knew she had an audience out there and she was writing to please her audience.
Yeah, that's what I got as well. She said she gave the public what they wanted. Yeah. Mm. Do we know which was her favourite character? Because I didn't go that far when I was looking for information.
No, I didn't. No.
No.
Be interesting to see. Maybe she didn't like any of them.
Mm. I tell you what I did find. Well,
that would be really miserable, wouldn't it? Yes, writing all those books about people that you really can't stand. Something else I found interesting, and I've just looked on my phone to check I'm correct, is that the last Poirot book was actually written during the Second World War.
Oh, right. That's interesting.
Yeah, and she kept it locked up in a bank vault, and it was the last of her books that actually was published during her lifetime.
I'm trying to find the
name. So I think Sleeping Murder was the absolute last one, which I think is a Miss Marple one. It's called Curtain.
Yeah.
Poirot's last case. Yeah. So she had it sitting there.
Waiting. Mm. So she was obviously wanted to kill him off.
But she should. That's good, because the first one is The Mysterious Affair at Styles, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
which is a cracker if you haven't read it. Yes.
Yeah. One of my favourites. Really, really good.
Apparently that's the one where, again, I found this out, that the first description of Poirot was by Hastings in The Mysterious Affair at Styles.
Mm.
And he said he was hardly more than 5 feet 4 inches, but carried himself with great dignity. His head was exactly the shape of an egg, and he always perched it a little on one side. The neatness of his attire was almost incredible. I believe a speck of dust would have caused him more pain than a bullet wound.
Yes, that's it. That's him perfectly, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, and David Suchet had him.
He was my favourite. I think David Suchet was certainly my favourite.
You know, he must have read and analysed the character so much. I wonder how many books he read or how many scripts he read to get to get it that good. Very, very good actor.
Quite a few people have played him, too.
Oh, yeah.
I think the first one was Charles Laughton.
Yes, yeah. I've got 31 people played him.
Wow.
But, of course, some of those will have been theatres. Some of them will perhaps been on radio and things like that. Yeah. But, yeah, because there are sort of probably 3 or 4 that we probably could think of that were on television.
The one I remember from being, you know, when I was small, would be Peter Ustinov.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he always seemed too big.
Yes.
Yes, he did. Yeah. Yeah, he was better at Maigret. He would have been, he was the bill for Maigret, not.
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, why you would cast someone who's so very not Poirot. But then again, if you think, I mean, Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, that's the thing. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, when you go back to that description that Hastings had of him as a small man, 5'4", you know, it doesn't fit in with Ustinov or Kevin Branagh.
No, and I know quite a few people. Yeah. I've seen the modern films, which I quite like, but they do not like him playing Poirot. Mm. They really don't. It doesn't feel right. He's too handsome and too, you know, sort of sophisticated. I mean, Poirot was,
and they've injected all this like backstory in as well. And John Malkovich played him as well, which was an interesting one. Yeah. I think that was the ABC murders on TV.
Ah, yes, I remember
that. But they messed around with that as well. So I won't get onto my hobby horse of people messing around with the books.
So. Yeah, where the stories have. I think probably, and again, I am quite happy to be corrected, the way they're portrayed on television, etc., have stayed quite faithful to the books, would you say?
Ooh.
Have they been messed about with a lot?
I tended to read most of the Agatha Christie's in my sort of teens and early 20s.
So. There is something, isn't there, about being a teenager and reading Agatha Christie. Mm. I wonder what it is.
I don't think I've read an Agatha Christie recently. No, that's not true. I've recently started reading... what's her name? Sophie Hannah.
Oh, yeah.
Who has got permission from the Agatha Christie Trust. Mm. And she's writing some, not just Poirot, but Agatha Christie, in the style of Agatha Christie.
But her she's characters.
Got, yeah, she's got yeah. four apparently out at the moment that have all that all feature Poirot.
Have you? What are they like?
I started reading one. I'm probably about halfway through it. I find it difficult when somebody else is trying to write in the style of an author that I know so well.
Mm.
The funny thing is that the story is very Agatha Christie like, and she has got, I'm sure the one I'm reading has got Poirot in, but the person it has got Poirot in, but the person alongside him is an inspector, but it's not Inspector Japp.
Oh.
She's using somebody else, and I don't know whether that's been done purposely, but it's a bit confusing when, yes. when you're used to Poirot being with Hastings or being with Inspector Japp.
Mm.
For her to be using somebody else,
yeah.
completely, still an inspector, you know, he seems to have a similar role as to Inspector Chap, but just a different name.
Yeah, that doesn't that sound right.
No, no.
I'm just imagining the estate. Yeah, you can do what you like. We'll probably be not having Inspector Japp. Yeah. He's ours. Yeah.
What a shame. he could have his own series, couldn't he? Inspector Japp Investigates.
Yep.
You should write to them, see if they...
I'll see yeah. if they...
Will
if
you
they,
release Japp?
Out into the wild.
Now, that's a whole story in itself.
Now, his backstory is that he's Belgian and people always call him French, which yes. he is very annoyed about. And he was a Catholic. He was written in as being a good Catholic boy. And like we've said before, I mean, Agatha Christie said she got influences from Arthur Conan Doyle and the Sherlock type of writing. I don't think there are probably many crime writers of around that time that could not have been influenced in some way by Arthur Conan Doyle, even if it was like, well, it's a load of rubbish, I'm not writing like that.
But it's there and you've got to decide whether you're going to emulate it or whether you're going to fight against it, I guess.
And as we said, Lestrade was the sergeant?
Inspector.
Sorry, inspector. In 1930, Agatha found Poirot insufferable, as Mike has just said, and wanted to get rid of him. He was also a character who was very seasick. He was obsessive-compulsive and needed to have in his bank at all times £444, 4 shillings and 4 pence.
Really?
Yes.
I was not aware of that. Of course, that would have been a lot more money in those days.
Oh, yeah, but it always had to be, you know, that amount. I'm sure...
What did he do with the rest of it?
I don't know. Maybe he invested it. I'm not sure.
Maybe he had like a don't matter account and everything else went in there.
Yes.
So obviously he had all his four was in one.
I know.
Would 4,444 have been okay?
Yeah.
Maybe.
But this is £444, 4 shillings and 4 pence. But when you get a bit of backstory in some of the plays and films and things, he was in the First World War, wasn't he? He was an officer in the First World War.
Yes, he was. Yes,
and then he came out and went into the French police.
Or Belgian police.
Was it Belgian police or was it French police?
Don't know.
No, I don't know.
But he was definitely happening in the police.
Yes. It would have been the Belgian police, wouldn't it? Because
it would make
Belgians,
sense. But no wonder everyone's confused and thinks he's French if he was in the French police. I mean,
that's confusion, his fault, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Surprising, though, isn't it? You know, that you have a character who is as well-liked as Poirot, and we all...
Except by the author.
and we all have our own picture of what he looks like, and many of us, it's based on portrayal by David Suchet.
Mm.
But the author didn't really feel a need to give him a lot of backstory, because the backstory that we've got, it's dripped in.
Gradually.
I think the fact that he's got a brother is mentioned in one of the books. His exploits in the war is mentioned in other books. It wasn't as though she felt as though she needed to create a whole backstory about him.
Well, the books aren't about him, I suppose.
No,
it's all about the case. And yes, Poirot's there, but he's kind of like a catalyst. He's never changed by it.
Yeah.
At the end, he still has £444 and 44p in his bank account. He still wants a square crumpet for his tea.
I know in one of the films, one of the latest films, we know why he has the moustache. Because there's really bad scar down here.
I didn't know that.
His beloved comes to see him and he sends her away saying, you can never love me again. Now, whether that is a modern take on things, I don't know. And then he grew the moustache over the top.
So he did fall in love, didn't he, with that...
Countess?
Countess, who was
Was it Countess Rossikoff?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, she was great.
Was she a bit of a jewel thief?
She wasn't. I don't think it was a bit of a jewel thief.
If they were doing the Muppet Hercule Poirot, she'd have been played by Miss Piggy.
Yes.
She had the air about her.
She did, yeah. So she was the Pink Panther to Hercule Poirot, was she? Yeah, it was interesting.
I'm now thinking about a Muppet like Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
It would. We'll have to cast it.
Released at Christmas. Yeah.
Definitely.
Just gone and had a look. You know, I was talking about Sophie Hannah having this sidekick. It's a Scotland Yard inspector called Edward Catchpole.
Oh.
Catchpole.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it just seems strange.
It just seems strange, yes.
We want Jap.
Did you know also that...
Sorry, Miss Hannah.
Poirot is the only person, is the only fictional character to receive a front page obituary in the New York Times.
No.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
When he was killed off, front page obituary.
And again, it goes to that thing that when people are so invested in a character, have they got this little bit of belief that they're real? I think
that's always the case, isn't it?
It's like the people who write to Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
Because 221B, wasn't it in the kind of, well, it was, I don't think there ever was a 221B, but where it would have been was an Abbey National. Back in the day, and they used to get all that. I think there was actually someone whose job was to deal with the Sherlock Holmes mail.
Oh dear,
I know. You do have to wonder about people.
Well, yes. But we see that all the time. I mean, you see it on television when there's a. I know none of us watch soap operas. I do, but don't tell them. And there's a horrible character in it, and somebody will go up to them in the street and have a go at them. You leave Elsie alone. She's not deserving what you're giving to. And you go, I'm an actor.
Oh, I saw a great one of that recently. Matt Smith, one of the Doctors Who, was filming something near Glastonbury. And someone came up to him and said, "Yeah, I can't believe you said that to that poor woman." And he went, "What? I haven't said anything." She was like, "Don't you say it wasn't you, because you're all the same man." And it was another Doctor Who who'd said it.
I wonder how much ale they'd partake of.
Who knows?
I suppose in a way that just shows the cleverness of Christie's writing and also the skills that people like Suchet have in making that character their own so that they become believable.
Yes.
You know, they become almost...
Can't take it away from them, can you? I mean, as I say, one of Liz's and Paula's series, I'm really invested in the characters now, you know, and I'm reading it and I'm going, oh no, don't do that, no, you'll get hurt if you do.
Oh, I suppose I better not kill them then.
No, please don't.
Book six, who knows what's going to happen.
It does make you wonder though why Agatha Christie hated him so much in the end, in the same way that Conan Doyle just...
Well, what was it in her description of him? Let's think about that. What was it again?
Yes. Let's analyse what she said.
You're going to analyse.
Yes,
detestable, bombastic, egocentric, little creep.
Yeah, that's pretty comprehensive, isn't it? No, say what you really think, Agatha.
But he was only detestable, bombastic, egocentric and a little creep because that's what she'd made him.
Yes.
Yeah. Which makes you wonder why.
Why?
Is it a bit of that?
I wonder if it's based on someone that she'd met.
I'm just trying to think of her other heroes. So she had Miss Marple.
Yeah.
Was that it?
Tommy and Tuppence.
And Tuppence.
She was also a nurse in the Second World War.
She had a lot to do with pharmacy and stuff.
Yeah. I think she was a nurse in one of the wars. Yeah. I don't know which one.
Because I remember something that she said about she had like a pharmacist or someone over her. And one time he showed her something that he had in his pocket and it was something that was really, I think it was a vial of something and it was something that was really, really dangerous. And she said, you know, why are you carrying that? Because it was the kind of thing where if you dropped it, it could have, you know, it could have been really, really serious consequences. And he said something like, it makes me feel powerful.
Oh, actually, that's lovely for a character, a bad character, an evil character.
But she also, I'm almost sure it's the First World War where she was a nurse. And when Germany invaded Belgium, lots of the Belgians came across.
That's true,
And I think she came into contact with lots of these Belgian refugees.
Stuff we don't know,
and
isn't
there was
it?
A feeling that's where she may have picked up on this idea of Poirot being
a refugee. A Belgian. Yeah.
Do you think we glean more from perhaps reading her biography? Because I've never read that. I presume there is one.
There's an autobiography which I've read.
Was there anything in there that told you about her background that, you know, would cast light on the fact that she doesn't like
it's a while person. Since I've read it. I mean, it's an autobiography, so she tells you what she wants you to know. So, yeah, I should probably read a biography and see if there's anything dirt different. To be dished.
Yeah,
the dark thing is, you may have hated him, but apparently she wrote, he stars in 33 novels, 50 short stories, and an original full-length play written by Agatha Christie. So
I think he got the last laugh there, didn't he? Yeah.
She obviously persevered with him.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say, I mean, obviously I'm not Agatha Christie, but I can't say that I don't like any of my characters. And I get quite sad when I have to kill them off, but kill them off I do.
You do, you're pretty ruthless.
I think it must have been difficult for her to carry on writing about somebody that she really didn't like. For all those years.
But the thing is, if you've got publishers and they want you to do something and that's in your contract, I guess you don't really have a choice unless you want to go and find yourself another publisher. And,
yeah. I suppose the thing is, though, that it must be difficult to still keep that level of intensity. And you know, because if you read all of his, you don't suddenly think, oh, this is dipped off.
Yeah, it's not as good.
It doesn't seem as good as the previous ones. So she's kept that consistency through all the books.
Brilliant writer. Wasn't she a brilliant writer? Mm. I mean, when you think of the things that she put out there, I'd just like to have 10 minutes to talk to her. Yeah. You know, and they go, who would you like to have a cup of tea with? Or, you know, that sort of thing. Who would you bring to dinner? I think Agatha Christie would be at the top of my list.
See, I'd like to have her house, which was wonderful. Greenway down in, where is it? It's near Torquay.
Is it called?
Greenway.
Cornwall?
No, it's Devon.
Devon. Yeah. I always get the... Sorry, people that live in Cornwall and Devon. I have got no sense of direction whatsoever, and that is included when I'm going around Warrington, so it's nothing personal. I'm just very, very bad. And they'll carry on making the... I mean, this lady that's writing... Sorry, what's her name?
Sophie Hannah.
Will they turn those into television films or...
I'm not sure if they would need to because they've probably got so much material from Agatha Christie herself. I think it could be. I mean, I don't know, but when you think of something like Sherlock Holmes, there were lots of film and television adaptations of his book, and then they moved it up a level when they did, what's his name, Cumberbatch?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they made Sherlock Holmes modern. Now, whether they might try and do something like... You never know, do you?
I don't know. I can't imagine a modern Poirot.
No, I can't.
No.
And it's so very set in his ways, it feels like. Yeah.
What you could do, though, is you could make him as somebody that's on the spectrum because that would fit his character and about having to be exact and everything. You could possibly angle it from that point of view and have him as a detective, a modern detective.
But it's an interesting thing because, you know, the order and method and the exactitude is kind of, she kind of plays it for comedy.
Yes, she does.
You know, and Hastings kind of, you know, takes the mickey out of him very gently about, you know, stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's whether you would have to adjust the handling of that if you went down that route.
One thing I did like about the Suchet series was the, and this is just a personal thing, the beautiful costumes, especially the ladies, and the men's were all right, but some of the costumes the ladies had on were beautiful, you know, absolutely gorgeous. And I love that era from a perspective of costume design.
Yes.
So when they bring it into the modern age, that wouldn't work as well, would it?
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with some shows. You are watching for the set design, the costumes, the houses, the gardens, all of that.
A lot of Art Deco, Art Nouveau going on.
But, I mean, even the titles, I could just watch the titles.
I know. Where they've been,
but yes, people, I'm a bit sad.
Many people probably thought that of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Take him out of Victorian London and it wouldn't work.
But it did.
I think it did.
I mean, I like Elementary, which not everybody likes. Yeah.
No, I like Elementary.
Where they took it over to New York. So they were, again, they were... And it was very cleverly written, and the actors that do it are, in my opinion, absolutely brilliant.
So is it... I don't know. I'm kind of just speculating here, but does it say something about Poirot as a character that we can't imagine him in a different environment in a different time, whereas with Sherlock Holmes we can?
Sherlock was very abrupt to people, whereas Poirot had everybody in their place, didn't he? You know, Hastings was in his place and the inspector was in his place and he was always very courteous to ladies, and but they had their place.
Yeah. So, and also he was quite happy to let people think he was a buffoon.
Yes.
And a funny little man.
Yeah.
It's also, I'm trying to get this around, get this right in my head, but Poirot is very much a detective who doesn't necessarily look for clues. It's much more about people and how they react. Whereas Holmes was very much, he would look at you and notice that you've got a certain way you've tied your shoelaces, or a speck of dust on your collar. And would
yes. Or that, you know, the mud on your left boot could only have come from a particular, you know, bit of Camden or whatever. Because I think Poirot occasionally says things about, you know, all this grubbing around on the ground, I'm not Sherlock Holmes, you know, the little grey cells will do the job. Yes.
So when you go back to Sherlock Holmes, they were able to bring that up into the sort of modern day time, because in a way, with all the sort of messages that come on the screen with Cumberbatch, it's almost like technology.
Yeah, and the thing is also, you think if Sherlock Holmes had had access to a mobile phone, oh my life, the amount of text he would have sent.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's kind of like telegrams would fly around.
Yeah, and the horse-drawn carriage that he always had outside his house when he wanted one.
Yeah,
and
that even though the tube was readily available.
Yes, well, you know, the only time I saw them on the tube was with the bomb. The threatened bomb explosion, but no spoilers.
Yes. But no, there's even tubes in the original books.
Yeah, when I went to London recently and I did a tour of the underground stations that aren't used, and we saw the one that Skyfall, you know, the map where James Bond is coming down the between the escalators, he's sliding down, and he's also in a big tower that was in the underground, and it was amazing. And apparently, it was something like £5,000 an hour to hire a train and to have it actually in the station, sort of thing. But the lady that was doing the tour said one went in accidentally once. The driver got a bit carried away, drove into the station, then looked round going, I shouldn't be here.
Which is a bit scary when you're driving a train.
Apologise to the passengers.
I mean, what do you do? Back out quietly? Hope nobody noticed.
He got out, walked to the front going, you know, red face. Got in the front of it and then drove it out of the tunnel again. But yeah, she apparently this is a tale. Oh, Paddington Burr as well was made on this station. Oh.
How have we moved from Poirot?
The same way as we always do. It seems like an innocent diversion, and then like one of us just takes it and runs with it. So
sorry about that, folks. Yeah.
So Poirot.
back to the man in hand.
Yeah, it was because we were talking about his time and the settings and the props and all the rest of it, and that was how the trains... It was my fault for mentioning the tube. Sorry, everybody.
But it will be interesting. I intend on trying to read another one of these Sophie Hannah books.
Yeah, report back.
Yes.
I always think the great difficulty is that it's almost impossible not to make a straight comparison, isn't it? Because they're using the same character, well, except for...
Would you take on a job like that? If someone said to you, like, you know, pick an author you really like we'd like you to write another one of these.
Probably not, because you're going to, the chances are of you upsetting so many people. Yes. You only need to get something wrong. Like my first thing was, who's Catchpool?
Yeah.
You know, where's the inspector?
Who's this usurper? Yeah.
and that probably is an insignificant part of the story, but it was stuck with me.
See, I go back to the question then, is it a fanzine type of book that a fan has written that's very close to the story? Because I think that's what they are, aren't they, fanzines?
I don't think, I think it's a bit like Anthony Horowitz, who's writing James Bond.
And also has done some Sherlock Holmes.
I don't think they can do that without getting permission from the relevant...
I think with Sherlock, it's easier because out of copyright, as I know, because I checked before I did one. Yeah. But yeah, it's difficult because I've read a couple of the Anthony Horowitz ones, the Sherlock ones, and I must admit I did fume at parts thinking he would never have done that. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not him.
I suppose the difficulty that if you're an author like Anthony Horowitz or in Poirot's case, Sophie Hannah, you want in some ways to put your own mark on it as an author.
And yet, but is that what people want?
Is that what people want? Yes. Yeah.
I think most people want it to stay true to the person that they've grown up with, don't they? That's the thing. Yeah. Somebody took, and I know it's going from one extreme to the other, but somebody's taken over writing the Agatha Raisin books.
Oh, yes. What are
Mrs.
those
Beaton
like?
Died.
Oh, MC Beaton, yes.
Yeah, and I think the writer always gives all his credit to her at the beginning, saying, you know, he met her, he worked with her in her latter years and everything. And I think they're very good, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's ever been a time when I've read it and thought, like you say, she wouldn't do that, she wouldn't have done this. I think he's got it pretty well down to her.
Well, it probably helps, doesn't it, if you've
worked with
already had a personal relationship with the author and presumably you are invested in. You know, and probably also being paid quite nicely to do it. Let's be honest here.
I suppose the other thing is why would you want to do it?
Money?
I
could say cold hard cash.
Yeah,
how many people will pick up that book if it's got Hercule Poirot and it's got Agatha Christie's signature on it, which I'm pretty sure they have.
Yeah,
even though they're by Sophie Hannah. Mm. You know, and then maybe some of those people will think, I enjoyed that. I wonder what else this Sophie Hannah has written.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
if you're listening, Sophie.
Like yeah. Hi.
We're having a discussion about you, but it's not detrimental. We're just trying to compare and contrast.
Yeah. Well, I should give one of these a go and see what.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I might do. Yeah. Right. There we are. So more readers for Sophie Hannah.
Yeah.
There we go.
Right. Have we anything else important to say about Poirot? Apart from the fact that we all think he's wonderful. Well, I do. I love watching. I will watch and re-watch. Did you say you do that, Mike? The television.
The television ones, yes. Especially with David Suchet. Yeah, I could watch those over, and I probably have done.
I might have to. I might have to put a Poirot in my book box and enjoy another one.
Yes. It's interesting because you were saying about the Russian countess.
Yes.
Oh yes.
I was watching part of that the other day, a week or so ago, and it's when he left. His secretary and Captain
Hastings
to solve something on their own. And they really were struggling, really were, yeah. And every now and again he'd throw them a tidbit and they'd both go, oh, yeah.
I read also when I was doing some research for this that Miss Lemon, she worked for somebody else beforehand. One of Agatha Christie's other stories. Did you?
I was not aware of that.
What are other stories? Tommy and
Tuppence and.
Oh, Tommy and Tuppence. Is she in those? Oh,
I thought that's
what
I read. That
she might have been because Tommy was. He worked in the Foreign Office, didn't he?
I don't think I've ever read Tommy and Tuppence.
I think he was slightly, Secret Service.
Oh.
Ever so slightly, but, you know, don't quote me on that.
He always struck me as a bit of an amiable duffer, mind you.
Yes, true.
Sorry, Tommy.
if you're listening, Tommy, and you want to come back to us.
Well, apparently Miss Lemon's first name is Felicity. There you go.
Felicity Lemon.
It's a good name, isn't it?
Yeah. We're just trying to see if we can find out whether she did actually work for somebody else before.
Or whether I was just making it all up.
Well, I'm just looking in the Hercule Poirot wiki, which does exist, and it doesn't say... she also worked for the government statistician turned philanthropist Parker Pine.
Oh,
there you go. There's another one. Parker Pine Investigates. I haven't read that one.
Well done, Mike.
Thank you. I got the wrong
I did not
character,
know that.
But
No, I was thinking she might have been, you know, like a high fluting secretary in the Department of, you know, Secret Service people.
Maybe she just liked working for detectives.
Maybe she did.
Yeah. I wonder what was going on in her life maybe she was hiding stuff and she thought, I'll pick someone who's so busy in solving like other people's mysteries they will never be on to me.
The only time I ever saw
The Secret Life of Miss Felicity Lemon
was when she was trying to get Hercule's shirts pressed the right way or something like that.
Press your own shirts,
yeah,
man.
Something like that.
Honestly, they
had to go to the right laundry. So yeah. I think with that, we'll
just before you finish, a quick plug for the Only Murders in My Mind blog.
Oh, yes.
If you've not had a look at it, please look it up. It's on WordPress. And we put a story prompt up, picture story prompt up every Friday. And if you want to have a go at writing a story, we'd love to see them. And every now and again, we choose one of those stories and read it out on the podcast. But come and have a
With permission, of course.
Yeah, come and visit us.
Yes, come and say
hi. All sorts
of
interesting things on there.
Yes. Murder someone in text.
Yes.
Yes, we do it all the time.
Sorry,
oh, you
Carol,
do, Carol.
No, not at all. I am here to be interrupted. I think we've covered everything we want to cover on Hercule. And
for now,
yeah. Mm. So like us, press the bell, and tell your friends about us, and keep listening. And we'll be around this time next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music in Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.